Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and there's a really cool horror movie out now called They Reach. And with me today are executive producer Jason Connolly and our lead actress Mary Madeline Rowe, who plays Jessica Daniels in the movie. And having a geek girl representation from the 70s, late 70s, early 80s era on screen was just so nostalgic for me. And seeing that played. So thank you, Jason, for putting this story out there for us.
Well, yeah, you're welcome, Summer. We're really excited, and certainly the creative writing of Bri Troyer, who is our producer and co-writer, and Silas Stahl, who is the director, of course, producer and the co-writer, and then really wanting to bring a unique story, particularly that is against type, if you will, you know, for that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And showing that, you know, with smarts, you can kind of conquer anything. And Mary Madeline Rowe just really created her character and adapted her character in such a marvelous way. It's really been a lot of fun actually going through the process of, you know, when you go from page to screen, and then having the hero and she recruits her friends to save the day is really great. And if it's helpful for context for your viewers, I can let you know what the log line is. And the folks that are listening, a log line is basically one or two sentences, the elevator pitch, if you will, for our story.
Please.
And it's set in 1979, a 13-year-old girl. She accidentally unleashes a demon from a vintage reel-to-reel player. And then she does recruit her two best friends, Cheddar and Sam, to conquer the beast before it devours the souls in the small town of Clarkston. And that is our story. And then everything just gets unleashed from there. So our hero on the phone, Mary Madeline Rowe, leads that charge in a kick-ass, awesome way.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad you enjoyed the movie, Summer. It means a lot.
I did. I have to know, how did you get this script to get this part? And were you looking forward to playing the geek?
So I actually had gotten a part of this project through the executive producer, Jason Connolly. And so he introduced me to Silas, and that's when I first read the first version of They Reach. And as soon as I finished, I knew instantly that this was something I really wanted to be a part of. And I was very eager to bring Jessica to life because I really saw a lot of myself in her. And by that, I mean that we both are really big science geeks. I'm actually the CFO of the first robotics team at my high school.
Nice.
So we have robotics in common and science. And we both have a small group of friends that are loyal to us and that we trust no matter what. And we're both really tough and hardworking. I think
Amen
because of our similarities, I was able to do her justice and bring her to life.
Amen to that.
One of my favorite scenes is when her father is, he looks like he's lost trying to figure her out, and then he sees comic books, robots, a model of the solar system, little tinkering things, and he goes, okay, I get it now.
Yeah. Well, and that was part of the struggle in the story too, right, is getting the acceptance, you know, of her father, because it's untraditional for the day. And that was what I think really gives this story some heart. So the struggle that Jessica has to, in the message, is to be yourself. And the father, you know, we had just, when we come into the story, you know, they're coming back from a funeral, you know, and so they're suffering great loss, and they all kind of grieve in their own way. And it's through the story that we show the connection between the daughter and the father. And you start to see how similar they are of liking to tinker. You know, she definitely you know, is definitely in the workshop with her dad, definitely gets involved with, you know, with experiments and taking things apart, you know, and stuff I used to do as a kid. And it's funny, I always had pieces left over, but yet the blender still worked just fine without these pieces, you know. And so kind of hearkening back, and you said something similar earlier, Summer, is that it's, yeah, it does kind of bring you back, you know, to that era, you know, in the late 70s. And I think that's a magical moment, that one of the hurdles that Jessica has to come through, and she does it beautifully. You know, she does it really beautifully.
Well, thank you. Yeah, one of my favorite moments in the film is when Jessica's dad, played by Ash Calder, who is incredible to work with, by the way, he stumbles upon Jessica's science project, and he just looks at it with such pride and admiration and realization in his eyes. And it just makes me feel so happy and so just warm and fuzzy inside, because this is the moment when he realizes that Jessica is who she is. Mm-hmm. And it's great. And he finally recognizes a bit of himself in her, in that tinkering aspect and the science, common ground of science, that they finally are able to connect.
Yeah, that is one of my favorite scenes in the picture as well, you know, it played beautifully by Ash and Elizabeth Roth as the mother, and the interaction also with her fellow heroes, you know, Cheddar played by Eden Campbell. And then we have, Sam played by, Morgan Chandler, and just how we see them in their private moments away from adults' eyes, really trying to work the problem. And that is really the epitome of their science project that you're talking about, that particular moment, which is a great turning point in the film. And I'm really excited for people to see that moment, because it's game on. And, it's just another moment, as well as the part where they're on their bicycles, you know, harkening back to the day,
right,
riding your bikes without helmets,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm
the little daredevils that we are.
The little daredevils that you are. And I think a lot of people will get a real deep appreciation for the time frame, because Silas did a masterful job recreating the late 70s. And obviously with the rest of the crew, the cinematographer, James Winters.
Yeah.
You know,
James Winters is incredible.
Philip Ryan for the sound. I mean, just absolutely just amazing recreating this world. And it's so funny talking with our young heroes, you know, they weren't around then. And so really trying to explain, you know, rotary phones, you know, just things that just, you know, weren't around back then. It was really fun for us as a crew. There's a little bit of it where we all kind of looked at each other going, oh my gosh, are we that old? Who rolls up a window anymore? Right. The expression roll up a window. And it really brought up, I think, the child in all of us, and because they were so committed to the story, it was just so wonderful that they were able to very accurately just jump into that world. And there are heroes, you know, and Mary Madeline, Jessica is our hero, and it's, you get behind her and you cheer for her.
Yes.
It's just, God, I'm getting teary-eyed just talking about it right now, you know.
One element I really enjoyed was how seamless it seemed to be that you understood that these three friends had a connection. There was an unwavering trust and unfailing friendship there. And they believed in each other when things start going sideways in a really, really weird fashion. They're still there. They're not turning and running. They literally are leaving no man behind, if possible. And the trust in each other and each other's abilities to help solve the problem, I loved that.
Yeah,
I thought that was a really important part of the film, and I'm really glad you picked up on it and appreciated it. I really enjoyed how the characters were just so, they just accepted each other for all their idiosyncrasies and for everything about each other. They didn't question anything, and they just let each other be who they are.
It was it was definitely, I mean, well said, Mary Madeline. Summer, it was, you know, it was interesting as being on set with them. They were just the camaraderie that you're expressing was throughout the entire production. Even when the cameras weren't rolling, you know, it was so amazing watching them lean on each other. You know, let's say, because, you know, there is the technical side of acting, right? You get your lines down, you do your homework, and you're prepared to make those choices as an actor. But the technical side is, okay, I need you to stand right here. We have the camera coming down on you. You need to keep in your light. And the camaraderie that the team had between the takes of figuring out, like, oh, my gosh, I'm having a problem with this. Can you give me a hand? And the way they attacked the to help tell a hell of a story on film is the exact same spirit that you see in the picture. They were that way offset. And so also being the production acting coach was a delight for me because they were feeding off each other. And that was authentic. They were constantly helping each other throughout the whole thing. It was just amazing, you know, and hearing you hear how that translated into the film, I mean, it just, you know, it's, you just, you can't fake it. It's real. You know, and that's one of the being the vantage points that we've been able to watch the film, not only as a finished story, but going through the process, that camaraderie was there all the way through. It was just definitely a magical moment.
I enjoyed
for
it.
For sure. I have nothing to add. Jason said it all.
Well, speaking of getting into how everything was put together, talk to me about the effects, because I am old school. I love practical effects. I love when you see a real arm reach out, whether it be prosthetic or robotic. I love the pile of goop on the floor that is supposed to be someone's entrails, and you go, "Oh, that's a really nice job they did there." How much of the viscera was practical?
Most of that was practical, and we have to give huge props to our makeup artist team. Hip Kretzinger, I think, led that, and they just did such an incredible job, and everything looked so realistic, and that just helped us even delve more into the characters, because you really looked like what they were going through and were very much embodying them.
Yeah, we're with you. I mean, it comes down to it, you know, all movies are a trick. And we're the tricksters. And what's really great and is that when you have practical effects, it's a lot easier to respond to than a digital effect. And a lot of the film, we did our own smoke with the monster, with the axe chopping. I'm trying not to give too much away. But, you know, we did have professionals that created these things to such a degree of authenticity and accuracy that I think it really... And I think it shows that how it has the actors. We do have some digital assistance in certain areas, but for the most part, what you're seeing there when good old sheriff Freddie Floyd, played by Freddie Floyd, plays our sheriff. You know, when he gets the stuff
blood cannon to the face
in the face. That's a real. That's a practical effect, and that he was such a trooper because he would have to be, you know, dressed up for continuity, you know, through the picture, you know, and you know, just the wizards that worked on the physical makeup, the wardrobe being, you know, worn, and as the story goes on, being coated with various film goodness, you know, and then you know. Mary Madeline said it best, the blood cannon, you know, which was, it's a heck of a lot harder than you think to get your PSI level and blood viscosity, as well as maintaining the color just right. And that was test every way to Sunday, you know, because it's always tested, you know, for safety. Safety first. And I'm really glad to hear you say that, because a lot of love and care from a lot of really great artisans went into creating those practical effects. And it's, you're warming my heart right now.
You have no idea how tickled I was. I have to ask, you as executive producer probably got to see the wider view of this, but the wink, wink nudge to the 70s horror films by having the dad and the sheriff drive around for so long and never wipe a drop of blood off their faces was hilarious to me.
I got to give credit. That's all Brian Troyer and Silas Dahl. You know, their writing to kind of add the little kitschiness to it. You're absolutely right. I mean, and that's, you know, and that's on point. Makeup has to be on point for that, you know, because you have to take all the reference shots and all the photos and just to make sure we can recreate it, you know, because obviously you can't film everything in one day. It's just a testament to the love and the passion that was carried throughout the entire production. And then Silas setting the tone with his storyboards, with his color palettes, you know, working with the director of photography, you know, getting that lighting down. It's just really, and I was there for almost every shooting day. There's a couple I had to be excused, but it's just so fun to see once you get the music added, you know, the lighting and the editing and the marvelous score by Carlos Garcia and all the musicians that, you know, contributed to the story. Just, you know, it just really comes together in a really excited way. And I'm just, God, you're warming my, I am floating 3 feet off the floor right now, Summer. This is just, you know, because you're involved with it for so long, you know, and you have these people like Mary Madeline Rowe. It just warms our heart.
Well, Mary, I have to ask you, what for you was the most fun of helping make this film, of like either a particular scene, a particular action sequence? Because for me, the part where you said, I know guns, I'm like, oh, we're going to see a Jessica Wick, aren't we?
Well, watching the film for probably the 10th time, because I've shown it to so many people, I'm just like, oh my God, guys, look at my movie. When I'm watching it, the funnest one to watch, and I cheer for Jessica every single time, all my friends look at me like I'm crazy, is when she shoots the shotgun at the demon. And it's so cool. The added effects and the bullet and everything, it just looks so real. And Jessica just looks so cool and badass. But my favorite scene to actually shoot was the scene, well, there's a particular scene where Jessica is running out of a house. And I'm really trying not to get too much away.
I know, right? I'm thinking the same thing, Eminem, because I'm getting all caught up in it.
Yeah, she's running out of a house, and she reaches back, but she's yanked away by Alex, the priest, and he throws me over his shoulder, and I get to, like, slam my fist and scream as hard as I can against his back, and then he just tosses me in the car, and we, like, drive off, and I'm still pounding the windows to get back in the house. That was probably the funnest to portray, but the Jessica shotgun one was the funnest to watch.
Oh, and I got to tell you, you know, I would love to sit here, Summer, and tell you that those are all done in one take, but not. And the energy and the passion and the power all the kids had, but particularly that scene where you have such a high emotional value and you have a physical, you know, it was all worked out with the actors beforehand, you know, the hitting and stuff like that. So everybody was safe. But the energy to expel that take after take after take was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And I don't know if I've ever shared that with you, Mary Madeline, but your stamina, endurance, and focus was just absolutely, you know, we had to get the reverses, you know, you get the wide, you get the reverses, you get the, and you were just on point every time. And that, as an artist and as a filmmaker, that's fun for me to watch an actor, you know, harness the technique of acting and selling the story. That was a wonderful scene. Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Jason.
Yeah, that was well done.
Well, I don't want to dive too deeply because I don't want to spoil anything. And I really do want my listeners to go check this out when they can. But are you guys planning on any future horror or sci-fi movies?
So there's been talk of revisiting the world. I know Silas and Bri have kind of talked about revisiting the world of They Reach. You know, the film has been so well received. I mean, it comes down to this. We're an independent film. A bunch of people got together and, you know, we worked really hard and we hope you like us. And hearing your feedback, Summer, has really been, you know, this is kind of what it's for. It's for the audience. And I so much want to, and maybe we should do another interview after the film has been out for a little bit where we could talk a little bit deeper. Cause I know the Blu-ray does have a 60-minute featurette that shows the making of, and that's just, I tell you, that's like a travel down memory lane of all the stuff that we're talking about. Cause you're right. Cause we don't want to give it away, you know, a lot of this activity, but, it definitely is an experience that I will never forget, and I feel so grateful to have been a part of this, to have been a part of this journey.
Well, I for one would be up for that, and you have to tell me, is there a commentary track on the film? Because I love commentary tracks. It's a thing.
Great question.
There actually is. Yeah.
Yes.
There's a commentary track on the Blu-ray with the producer Breitner and Silas. And then there's also a separate one with the trio.
Nice.
Yeah, with the kids. Oh, it's great. Nice. Oh, yeah. It's sweet.
I can't wait to check that out. And just for the record, I would love to see a movie sometime in the future where Mary Madeline is building robots. Just saying.
Me too. That would be so much fun.
So tell our listeners where they can keep track of Mary Madeline and you too, Jason.
Well, I would say one of the best places to do that would be to go to our website, which would be theyreach.com. And and that way you can keep up on all the latest fan information on there would be the best way. That way you just keep you updated, as well as you can find out where to see the film and stuff like that.
And to keep tabs on me, my Instagram is my name, Mary Madeline Rowe. And also my IMDb page would keep people in touch about like what projects I'm currently doing or post-production or anything about that.
Awesome.
Yeah. My Instagram is Jason on location. As well. Thank you, Mary Madeline, for reminding me that. It's,
yeah.
You know, getting used to the Instagram thing and on that.
Awesome. Well, we will have links to all of that. And I can't stress enough how much fun I had with the nostalgia and the story of They Reach.
Well, thank you so much. That really means a lot.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. More than you realize, Summer. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hey there. Merle Lafferty, co-editor of Escape Pod here. And I just wanted to let you know, if you are listening to this podcast right now, then you probably would enjoy our very first print anthology. Escape Pod, our 15th anniversary print anthology, will feature a mix of stories, some of which have been on the site, some are reprints that may be new to you, and some are brand new stories from people like T. Kingfisher, Maurice Broaddus, Greg Van Eekout, and our own Tina Connolly. I also contributed a story featuring the universe from my book, Six Wakes. So if you are in the UK, you can get your copy October 20th, and if you're in the US, you can get your copy on November 17th. But check it out. We're pretty proud of what we've done with this, just like we're pretty proud with what we've done with this entire podcast for the past 15 years.
Hi, I'm Aaron Ashmore from Sci-Fi's Killjoys, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
And They Reach is available now on demand and on DVD, which you can get from your favorite retailers. But the Blu-ray is only available on Amazon right now. And the Blu-ray is where you get an extra hour of bonus features, plus a commentary track featuring Jason and the director Silas, plus a second commentary track featuring the three kids. So whatever, if you want the bonus features beyond just the blooper reel, you need to get the Blu-ray. And right now, the Blu-ray is only available through Amazon. So do check that out if you, like me, are a huge, huge fan of behind-the-scenes material, especially commentary tracks. Especially commentary tracks. But this movie has a lot of nostalgia moments. Seeing the geek girls in their science gear and their tech gear. And no, I'm not going to spoil it. You have to watch it yourself. Go check out They Reach. Your various digital retailers, it should be available. And it's a fun movie. And full disclosure, there's another new horror movie out recently. I think it's on Shudder, called The Dark and the Wicked. And I was looking forward to this movie so much because it was written and directed by Brian Bertino, who did a movie a few years ago called The Monster. It's about a mother and a daughter who are driving. The mother is driving the daughter to her father's place because it's the father's turn to have custody of the daughter. And the car breaks down on an isolated back road. And yeah, their lives are kind of interrupted by a monster. It's sort of like a one-room horror story, but the room is the car, the broken down car. And I thought that was a really, really well done movie. The tension, the horror, the secrets, the deep, closely kept feelings between the estranged mother and the angry daughter come out, and the monster is just there. You can't see it, but you know it's there because it has done some damage. And I thought The Monster was a really, really well done movie. The Dark and the Wicked was not so much. And to see that and be disappointed by that and then come and see They Reach, it was like a breath of fresh air. The nostalgia, the nostalgia really didn't get me. It was the attention to horror detail that got me. And there's more of a story there that can be told. I don't know if they talk about revisiting that world, if they talking prequel or sequel or either one. I'm on board. I wanna see it. I wanna see it. So how are you feeling about horror movies these days? If you have any questions or comments, please call in. The number is 602-635-6976. Leave a voicemail message or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio Podcasts. And if you're listening on either Apple or Stitcher, please leave us a review. All reviews help signal boost the visibility of the show, get more listeners, more eyes on the website, more voices to comment. Because we all like geeky conversations, don't we? You can follow us on Twitter @SliceOfSciFi. And yes, I will get into conversations with people about all sorts of things. TV, movies, sometimes music, definitely comic book characters, especially superhero movies and TV shows. I cannot believe they are canceling Black Lightning after 4 seasons and doing a Painkiller spinoff instead of a Thunder and Lightning spinoff. Do not get me started. I wonder if after the initial shock is worn off, if maybe Tony Isabella would come back to talk about the legacy of the Black Lightning TV show and the new comic series that have been out in recent years. Reminder for people, Tony Isabella is the co-creator of the character of Black Lightning, who first appeared in DC Comics in 1977. We had a discussion about that on Twitter. And you can also follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/sliceofscifi. And of course, there's the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by, leave your own comments on the many interviews, the many movie reviews, TV reviews that we have here, DVD reviews. I did a review for the DVD release of James Cameron's The Story of Science Fiction. That was a delightful, delightful miniseries. I want more. I do, because it's science fiction, and we all know how I feel about science fiction. I love it. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently supporting the efforts here at Slice of Sci-Fi and the other shows in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe, including writersafterdark.com and babylonpodcast.com. Those podcasts, those websites stay online because of your support, for which I am deeply, deeply grateful. Thank you all. Thank you all. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Pick a tier, any tier, you will become eligible to receive a gift of the many books and DVDs and Blu-rays that I have around here that I need to find new homes for them because I'm running out of space. And these can be yours. And if you're unable to commit to a monthly pledge through Patreon but still want to help, the link to use is paypal.me/sci-fi summer. And for you folks who are Patreon supporters, you should have access to the patron messages that I send out and some of the perks. I'm still trying to figure out how to properly upload cool little bonuses for all of the tiered supporters. For instance, the interview a few weeks ago with Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, the directors of Synchronic, and before that, Spring and The Endless, that interview was video. So I have video of me talking with those two filmmakers, and I'm trying to figure out how to properly produce it so that you Patreon supporters can watch the guys, because yeah, blue hair, that's all I'm saying. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Actually, no, we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi after Thanksgiving. Everybody, enjoy your holiday. Stay safe, people. Please stay safe. And take care.